The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the queue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and this is another astounding, amazing week of fun that we are bringing to you here on the radio as well as worldwide on the interwebs. You're listening to us on 1280 AM KYRO and WestplexNewsTalk.com every Saturday from noon until 2 p.m. Central Standard Time is a great place for us to be. Well, you're moving our mics around. What are you doing? Why are we moving the mics around so much? I need to be able to hear you. I need to be able to hear you well.
We need to be able to hear you.
Oh, we do hear me with my microphone right next to my head. Always. Sounds great. I'm telling you. Last time...
What do I know? I'm just Mr. Producer, right?
Right, Mr. Producer. No. Last time it was you were dropping things in the studio when you first got here. Now it's you're moving the microphones around for people. I love the fact that you're a producer. Producer Matt.
I'm a horrible one. Apparently that one that makes too much dang noise.
Well, here's the situation. What we have this week on the stew that we are going to be bringing you is a gentleman who has decided that he is going to fire his entire staff if Obama is reelected. Also, we're going to have some letters from the listeners, a favorite, and if you didn't already hear his voice once before, you have heard it now twice before. One of my favorite people to have on the show, Matt Krueger from Savage Vibrations. What's going on, Matt?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you. I was wondering. I was like, are we going to get around to stroking my ego? You know, letting people know,
well, Matt,
you know,
I'm just gonna be really...
who this amazing voice is behind the microphone.
Matt, if there was one thing about me as a person, now you know me off of the air.
Yes,
okay.
I do.
Pretty well.
Yes.
If there was one thing about me that is just the bane of your existence when it comes to me, what would it be?
To clarify, the thing that I don't like?
Yes, you don't like the most.
The fact that you repeat yourself a lot.
Really? Repeat myself a lot?
Not what you were thinking I was going
to
say?
Well, no. Not that I wouldn't think that you would say that. I mean, I left it open for you to answer the question. I'm just saying... And give me an example, like repeat myself in the fact that...
Okay, have you ever seen like a mob movie and they always have that
You say?
Yeah, and it was like they have the kid, the one newsboy that they always call Yeah Yeah, because
okay,
he always
sure,
says yeah
sure,
twice.
Yeah.
It's that. It's like it's annoying sometimes.
Now the question is it full sentences, full paragraphs, or is it just like words?
Well, sometimes, like, let's say you're going into a sentence and you'll say the sentence, but then like there's the emphasis words from the sentence that you're supposed to take away, and sometimes after you're done saying that you'll repeat those words, I guess, for emphasis.
Okay.
And sometimes it's once, sometimes it's twice, sometimes it's three times. I understand the concept behind it. It's a type of a speaking format. You know, motivational speakers use it.
Right.
Public speakers use it all the time. I myself am not a fan. And sometimes it seems like when you do it, it's like, oh, wait, did they not hear me? I'm going to say it again. And then I'm going to say it again. Like, sometimes, like, if a comedian tells a bad... Like, you've seen this. Like, the stereotypical comic who tells the bad joke, but he thinks, oh, well, they didn't hear me, so I'm going to say it again. Maybe they'll laugh this time. Like, oh, well, maybe they didn't get the joke the first time. I'm going to say it again.
I see what you're saying.
It's a few different things. It's a few different options there for you to try to wrap your head around. But and it's not just you. I think that's just a pet peeve of mine that I have for people. Say things once, move on.
I'm going to clarify this entire statement with the thing that I have a problem with you.
All right.
Okay. I don't have anything. I absolutely have no problems with you whatsoever as a person.
Oh, I never said that I had things wrong with
and,
you as a person.
And I don't even have little like idiosyncrasies that bother me. I don't have anything.
Oh, you don't like literal Matt?
Oh,
wait, no, you like literal Matt.
I
That's
love
what
literal
you're saying.
Matt.
And you know what? And you even tell me that. You're like, that guy. Where's that guy been? I love that guy.
I do love that guy. See, I don't have, like, I'm a liberal. And liberals don't harbor any serious amounts of anger towards anyone for anything.
And see, and I will have to agree with you. I'm not sure if that's a liberal stance or just a personal stance
right.
that you have. But I don't harbor any ill will towards you for anything. I don't harbor any anger, definitely, towards you for anything. But you asked me if there was something, and I was put on the spot and had to come up with something that we could talk about.
You had to come up with something.
Mm-hmm. And it's worked.
Oh, you're amazing. You're amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know, our show every single week is sponsored by American Patriot Beer. That's right, AmericanPatriotBeer.com. Taking back America one beer at a time. Delicious, full, and light-flavored brews that you can put into your body at any time of the day.
Having trouble putting up with your co-host's repetitive nature?
Yep.
Have an American Patriot Beer.
It'll
help you get through the nonsense.
Do it. That's all I'm saying right there. AmericanPatriotBeer.com. Make sure you guys go and check them out. Great people. Now, I have been doing giveaways, Matt.
I know.
I'm doing giveaways.
I keep on hoping one of these days I'm going to win one.
It's very possible.
I never do, though.
You might win one. We have giveaways for both TNA Wrestling that is coming to the Chaffetz Arena in St. Louis, Missouri on October 27th. And we did an interview with James Storm. If you guys want to go to thecuenow.com, you can go listen to our episode a few weeks ago when we talked to James Storm, which was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
We had a good time talking to him. So we're giving away tickets for that, and we are giving away tickets to Scarefest. That's right, the Lemp Brewery Haunting, the Darkness Haunted House, and Creepy World here in the St. Louis area. I have tickets to all of them, and we are going to be getting Larry Kirshner, the owner, on the show soon so that we can talk to him a little bit about Halloween. You know, this is a self-made man here in the United States of America who started off with working at haunted houses, if I remember correctly, from the stories that I talked to him about many years ago. And then eventually he started his own thing and has turned it into an extremely profitable business each year during the Halloween season. And we're going to have him on soon, but we're giving away tickets to get into his haunted. And haunted houses can be expensive.
Yeah, they can.
I mean, $15-$20 a person per ticket.
Man, you gotta love that free market economy and capitalism that allows you to open a business and make something out of yourself.
Well, I don't care about free market economy. Not that I have a problem with it. I just don't care about it. That's why I give them away for free, ladies and gentlemen. I give them away for free. Do you like free, Matt?
Free is pretty good. You know, free food tastes better. Did you know that?
Did you really believe that?
Oh, yeah. Free food tastes awesome.
Honestly, we're going to have to come back to that one.
Tastes
here.
Like victory.
Anyway, if you go to the Facebook page for The Q, that would be facebook.com/TheQNow. That's TheQNow. You can go there, like the page. That's all you got to do. Set it and forget it. Just like the...
Ron Popeil.
Yeah, set it
and forget it. Set it and forget it.
It's just that simple. It was the dehydrator, wasn't it?
No, that was the rotisserie thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the rotisserie thing. Yeah. Set it and forget it. That's all you got to do. Go like the page, set it and forget it, walk away, and you could be randomly drawn to win a pair of tickets to see TNA here in St. Louis or to go to one of these haunted houses. So it's
what would you rather do?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
Because I know what kind of a fan you are.
I'm a pro wrestling fan. We've talked about that on the show before. I think... Right now, I'd want the haunted house tickets just because it's a seasonal thing. It's only here for a short period of time. You know what I'm saying? It is fun. When you get to Creepy World, they have like 9 or 10 or 11 haunted houses all in one spot at the same time, including a paintball one. They have a paintball one, dude.
Yeah, it's a from what I hear, it's like a haystack hayride.
Right.
And they have people in like their armor dressed up as zombies and they give you paintball guns and you're able to go out and hunt your zombies down.
Yeah, I'm bringing up right now the...
I wonder what the pay is like for taking a paintball shot to the face.
I have no idea. Oh, 9 haunted attractions, one location for one price. It's called Creepy World. It's the world's biggest scream park in Fenton, Missouri. And we've got tickets that we're going to be giving away.
Fenton has no other claim to fame.
Let us discuss exactly what we have here. Hold on. Bring that back. I wanted to read off the names of the different attractions at Creepy World. Good Lord. They're so fast. You have Raven's Mansion.
So why don't
Mansion,
you click the button that says
Route 666, Hogs and Corn Mazes, Silo X, Zombie Town, Grizzly Gore Zone, Twisted Tortures 3D, Demon's Dominion, and the famous Faces Pumpkin Display. So yeah, you got a whole bunch of things that you get to do there.
Nice.
And I think Zombie Town is the paintball hayride.
I just want to work there. I will work there for free and just, like, armor me up. Maybe we can discuss this, and maybe he can just, like, have me do, like, a guest spot one evening and be like, hey, if you shoot Matt Kruger in the face with a paintball gun, if he's dressed up as a zombie...
We'll give you a free hamburger.
Yeah, something like that. Anything. Because I just kind of want to be a part of that.
You just want to be shot?
Right. I'm a glutton for punishment. You should know that. I'm the guy that wants to take chair shots for no apparent reason.
That was absolutely the truth. By the way, you know, this is the 2-year anniversary coming up here really shortly of that match. If I remember correctly, it was right around this time, 2 years ago, that Matt, you were getting billed and thrown around a wrestling ring.
I was being pummeled by a 6'9", 275-pound man. And a tiny old person with a cane.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, you can go check out my wrestling match for charity for the American Diabetes Association that we did with High Voltage Wrestling. I wrestled Donovan Ruddick after we did the Donovan Ruddick, Mark Bland's Gonna Knock You Out series.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt got his shirt ripped, his jacket beaten down. He got thrown headfirst through a door that didn't open properly the first time.
There was supposed to be somebody to catch me. No, nobody was there to catch me.
And it didn't feel good. So that all happened. And yeah, so if you get a chance, go to youtube.com and search for Mark Bland, Donovan Ruddick. That's the easiest way to find that stuff. All right, well, let's get into the queue here since we've been talking about this. A CEO, let's say David Siegel, the founder and CEO of Westgate Resorts, a huge national timeshare company and one of the largest resort developers in the world. In 2007, he was a billionaire, although he maybe only a 100 millionaire now. He and his wife, Jackie, were subject of the recent documentary, The Queen of Versailles, about their ongoing quest to build the largest house in America, a 90,000-square-foot monument to excess.
That's huge, man. Well, your average home is what, 2,000, 2,500?
Yeah, 1,500 to 2,000 square feet tops, and on average. Jeez. On average. But this past week, David Siegel sent an email to all of his thousands of employees in which he, in a veiled way, basically insinuated that they would be fired if Barack Obama was reelected as president of the United States. Now,
I'm failing to see a problem.
I mean, that seems a little extreme, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think
it is extreme. I'm still failing to see a problem.
Well, no, it's his right to fire every single person from his company if he feels that he needs to take a business that's running and making him millions
now,
of dollars
I guess
and
what
just
it really
trash
kind of
it. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all for him.
It's ridiculous. I don't really agree with him. But, and it really kind of depends on whether or not it's a right-to-work state.
Now, here's what's really funny. This was picked up by a few news organizations, and after they posted the letter from him, they found out, thanks to multiple readers of the newspapers, that it bore suspicious resemblance to a popular chain letter that was circulated just before the 2008 elections. Well, they did a little researching, and they talked to David Siegel, who told them that the letter is real and that it was sent out to all of his employees this past week. I did use the letter that had circulated before as a guideline, but I changed it to fit my circumstances, he told them. It speaks the truth and it gives something to think about when they go to the polls. He also said that threats of possible layoffs are real based on his assessment of political and economic climate. He added that he hadn't had any negative feedback of the letter yet. The Florida-based Westgate Resorts is not a public company. It is the domain of David Siegel, a staunch Republican. In fact, Siegel has publicly claimed credit for George W. Bush defeating Al Gore, saying, "I had my managers do a survey on every employee, 8,000 in total that he has, and if they liked Bush, and we made them register to vote. If not, they liked Gore."
Huh. He's cooking the books and the voting.
This guy is, congratulations for being successful. I get it, okay? And I understand you're a Republican or a conservative. That's fine, too. I don't have a problem with either of those things. But I do have a problem with a vindictive nature. Mm-hmm. A vindictive nature that really has no effect on you whatsoever as a person. Now, you do, if you are a billionaire or a 100 millionaire or a millionaire in general, do fall into the realm of the tax brackets and things that are bantied about when it comes to the financial reforms and things like that that they're working on and tax reforms and all that.
Uh-huh.
So you do fall above the $250,000 breakpoint. But to have such a vindictive nature to the point where, like, regardless of the back. Now, I don't. If he does this, he would probably go down as the most hated man of 2012.
Hey, you got to make your mark somehow.
I'm just saying, like, if this actually goes through, let's say Barack Obama does get reelected, and within a week after that, he literally lays off or fires all 8,000 of his employees.
You know, if there's one thing that I've learned in my past job is that Everybody's replaceable. Like, most people don't have job security.
Right, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. This has nothing to do, like...
There's other people willing to do their jobs.
But no, that's... But you're missing the point. The letter in general is a broad-based, if this happens, then you all lose your jobs. Not because of you, this happened, therefore you lose your jobs.
Oh, I know, and I'm not claiming that it's because of them. I understand
but
that.
But think about that. Like,
yeah,
these people, they maybe one of them's got a Down syndrome kid. They just have normal lives.
What does
lives.
That matter?
But they have normal lives.
Everyone's got normal lives.
Okay, okay, I see you're playing the devil's advocate, and I have no problem with that. Uh-huh. I respect that. That's okay. Cool. But my point...
I'd be boring if I wasn't.
Of course. But my point is that if a person, in general, is using an extremely loose-based reasoning for why they're going to make such a super jump to the tune of 8,000 employees, mm-hmm. and they're willing to trash 8,000 people's lives over something that's not in their control... It is completely out of their control. The state of Ohio could literally decide whether these people have a job on Monday or not. Do you see my point? Like, this has nothing to do with them.
You know what they should do then? They should take their lives into their own hands.
Right.
And they should start petitioning. And they should start standing outside Walmart.
They live in Florida.
With flyers. And, you know, they should go and they should get their state... to vote a particular way, and then take it to Facebook, and really kind of be proactive in the situation, and do everything within their power to get Romney elected then. Depends on how much they like their jobs. How much are they willing to work to keep their jobs? How much of their lives are they willing to take into their own hands?
I think it just seems a little over the top.
It is over the top. I'm not going to debate that.
If this was a zombie apocalypse, I could understand an extreme situation like that. And you understand zombie apocalypses very well.
Yeah, I lived through
this. This isn't a zombie apocalypse. This is just an...
It's a Romney apocalypse.
This is just an a-hole in my book. And I don't think that this individual deserves at all, in the least bit, the respect of his employees. It is, if you are a true Republican, conservative, patriot of America in general, your biggest number one thing that you should be bantering, in fact, let's just be honest. Most conservatives tend to be constitutionally based in their beliefs. If the Constitution is your background, freedom of speech is the number one rule on that entire list.
Mm-hmm.
Their right to speak freely about what they want as the president of the United States, even if they're all in agreement with you.
But that doesn't mean that the freedom doesn't come with consequences.
Of course, but consequences of, okay, that's great when it's the Revolutionary War and the consequences are legitimately death or life.
Now the consequences aren't life and death. Now they're a little bit more simple. It's a deal.
Bullcrap. Yeah,
I
said it.
They're not life or death situations anymore because life or death, you know, it's not really that type. I guess it's not that serious. Now the consequences that you have to deal with are...
Lighter in tone.
Are lighter. You have to deal with being persecuted by, you know, your colleagues and your coworkers, and maybe people are going to egg and TP your homes and, you know, you might lose your job over it. You're not going to lose your life over it. But just because you have the right to say these things doesn't mean that you get to say them without having anyone that's not going to call you on your BS.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I get that. You know, I just think that this is the problem that I have with a lot of conservatives. And this is a good example. And I'm not just bashing conservatives, all right? I'm using this story as a reason to talk about it, okay? My problem is that you guys, the guys, and I say you because you, Matt, tend to fall in the conservative realm of things with your beliefs. You guys tend to have this rah, 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 we're for the past, our forefathers, all this stuff. But it was a completely different time period. When they were writing the Constitution, when they were coming up with these, when they were fighting that war or being the American patriot, it literally came down to life or death. There was no army.
So what you're saying is that you... Okay, go ahead.
There was no army. It didn't exist. It was brothers and sisters literally just picking up rifles and running out their front door to fight a legitimate army. There was no, hey, I'm going to go get drafted or become part of the military. There was no military. It was just a bunch of people dressed up in cold winter stuff just trying to fight off these guys that were a legitimate army. That's the legitimate truth. And it's one of the main reasons why we were able to win the Revolutionary War, because we were an untrained army. We didn't have the social feel of the armies that they were training over in Europe and stuff like that. That's why they would walk in a straight line, 7 or 10 across, and just walk down the path, hoping to kill you with the bayonets. And we were hiding.
Now,
we were hiding.
Now, here is an odd thought.
Sure.
It's probably going to be controversial, but what is it about the Q that you love so much?
I love controversy.
We won the Revolutionary War the same way we lost Vietnam.
Technically, yes.
The way we were
But we hid in Vietnam.
The way we were fighting the Revolutionary War, the reason America won the Revolutionary War is the same way that the Vietnamese were fighting in Vietnam, and it's the same reason we lost that war.
True, but untrue. You're right on the aspects of we were the foreigners in a foreign land that didn't know their land.
We were the big power.
Okay, we were the foreigners in the foreign land that didn't know their landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And the Redcoats were the foreigners in our land that didn't know our landscape.
Right.
Now, if you just line up 7 to 10 across, 400 deep, and you just go walking down a path straight, and I'm hiding or not hiding at all, you're just setting yourself up to get killed. Now, we didn't do that in Vietnam. We were the foreigners in a foreign land, but we didn't just line up to let them kill us.
Well, no.
We were hiding, too. We were going into rat traps or whatever they called those. I can't remember. My daddy was in Vietnam. He would know better than me. But we were going after them egregiously. We just didn't know the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't realize how
miserable it was there.
They didn't dress like a military. Redcoats dressed like a military.
But
what they look like.
But when we were in the Revolutionary
War, we dressed like a military.
Okay.
Not in the Revolutionary War. We dressed like just in regular rags.
Yeah, same way the Vietnamese did.
But that's my point. Even if you
There's similarities there. That's all I'm saying.
Although there are similarities. I'm just saying if you had rags over in Vietnam, mm-hmm. like if we dressed in rags just like the Vietnamese dressed in rags, I don't think that war would have gone any different still. I think you still would have, because you couldn't tell the difference between the good people and the bad people. In the Revolutionary War, there was a distinct, these people wear red coats and they march in a line. They're the bad people.
Okay.
So.
Now, the point I was trying to make before was, and you know, you were like, hey, can I finish? And I was like, I'm really sorry.
No.
So what you want to do is you want to change, you want to disbar the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, because they're antiquated pieces of parchment.
I would say that they are antiquated. I wouldn't say that they need to be disbarred. I think that they just need to be updated. That's it. I think it's an updated situation. I think the freedom of speech that they're talking about in the 1700s when they write the Constitution is a much lighter version than where we're at now in 2012.
I think it's the same. These truths that we hold self-evident still hold true.
Oh, no, they do. But my point is that we've found ways to manipulate it and loophole it so many ways mm-hmm. that they weren't thinking about when they wrote it. They were really general. They were literally coming out of a huge war against another country and walking right into something different. Listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break here on The Q. When we get back, more fun for you guys. Stay tuned. TheQNow.com. Go check it out during this break. We'll be back right after this. Heyo, let's keep this pirate ship moving, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Q. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, joined today by Matt Kruger from Savage Vibrations.
How you doing, Mark?
He's just trying to get my GERD. Even off the air, he was trying to get my GERD. I'm just telling you, I don't know exactly what his deal is today, but man, this guy is ramped up and ready to roll. Typical conservative. Matt, you like pizza?
Yeah, actually.
Is there, let's talk a little bit about pizza for a second. You know, you and me have been known to partake in multiple styles of pizza over our lifetimes, I'm sure. Both of us. are you a privy or a fan of any specific style of pizza or type of pizza?
Well, we live in St. Louis.
Yes, we do.
St. Louis has a specific type of pizza, which is basically thin crust and provolone cheese or provolone cheese.
Right.
I grew up on it. Yep. I really kind of like that. I guess I like a crispy thin crust. Then I do a big deep dish thick crust, spongy.
What would be your favorite topping?
I'm really weird with my toppings. If I were
Are you the guy who puts, like, artichoke hearts on with, like, pineapple and then, like, sprinkles?
I have done that,
sprinkles
yeah.
anchovies over the top of it.
Well, see, and my one topping, I really like anchovy pizza.
You know, I know a lot of people that like anchovy pizza. I think it's, well, I don't necessarily know if it's a good or a bad thing. I mean, I'm not privy to fish, but anchovies are pretty salty.
Right.
Relatively salty meat.
Well, like, I'll give you a couple of examples. And I moonlight in a pizza place for extra cash. You know, economy's tough. Got to have extra money. Got to pay the bill somehow.
Got it.
And so I moonlight in a pizza place.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Nope. And so I've been there for a few years on and off, and they allow me a lot of creative license when I'm making my own food. And two of the pizzas I've made recently, one was what I considered the bacon cheddar western burger pizza.
Okay.
And it's basically, I mix in barbecue sauce with the pizza sauce,
okay,
cheddar cheese, and then I put red onions, hamburger, and bacon, more cheddar cheese on top, and then I top it with onion rings.
Now, it sounds to me like your creative license almost is like a drive-through for Steak and Shake. To an extent, like, maybe you go through the drive-through at Steak and Shake and you're like, oh, the Wisconsin cheeseburger.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be my next pizza style.
And the other one I just recently made is a little different. I mixed in, we have like a white sauce, almost like an Alfredo sauce.
Okay.
That people will sometimes, you know, ask for on their pizzas. We also use it for, you know, like pastas, an actual Alfredo.
Okay.
Fettuccine. And so what I ended up doing was taking some of the white sauce, and I mixed in with the white sauce fresh ground, like mixed with vinegar, horseradish. And it was a little weird. And then what I did was I put on hamburger, mushroom, and tomato.
All right.
And with mozzarella cheese. It was very interesting. It was very different. It was something I had never tried before. I didn't know how it would turn out. But it was kind of like a prime rib pizza with the horseradish. You know, you
right.
use prime rib and horseradish, and, you know, right. you can get the, you know, topped with
so
tomatoes.
So you become a gourmet pizza chef is what you're saying.
I'm a gourmet, but I have interesting ideas, and I really like it. Pepperoni and green olive, I think.
You know, I'll tell you what
I like those very strong flavors.
I'll tell you what I'm really amazed at is that some company out there, like you have California Pizza Kitchen that sells over, they sell their pizzas in shopping centers.
Oh, yeah,
you know, like
your frozen foods section.
Yeah. I'm amazed that there hasn't been a large, like, here in St. Louis, there's a lot of thin crusts you can buy easily. Barbecue chicken pizzas, people do make them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a company in St. Louis that does a lot of, like, not charity, but fundraising. TJ's Pizzas. Really good, very tasty pizzas. And but I just thought that, you know, when you go down the aisle in the store, because it's all pre-frozen anyway, you mm-hmm. know, it's all pre-cooked and then it's pre-frozen. You just basically heat it up in your oven at home.
Right.
That they would literally have all these different varieties and versions that you can get at pizza places in the supermarket. But I guess that's not a big popular move for a lot of these companies to do that.
Well, so, I've like, seen
unique ones.
I've seen even things like Tombstone Pizza or right. like Red Baron and what's that? DiGiorno. It's not delivery, it's DiGiorno. They sometimes have the bacon cheeseburger pizzas, and they have the barbecue chicken pizzas, and,
right.
they have what, like the Maharita pizzas, which is basically tomato, basil, and mozzarella.
Yeah, the original style.
And so they're trying to go, and they're trying to offer different options, but, you know, I don't know how far they're going to go. I don't know if they're hot sellers.
True.
I mean, you got to think, your big ones are pepperoni sausage, pep sausage, and, you know, your special pizzas, your supreme pizzas.
All right, well, the reason I brought all this up is, what if I could say to you, Matt, you would be allowed free pizzas for life?
Well, I think we just made all of the viewers, well, not viewers, listeners, very hungry already. And so, why don't you tell me how I can get free pizza for life? Because I think it'd be awesome.
Well, Pizza Hut is offering one lucky pizza lover free pizza for life in exchange for one tiny tiny favor, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Not flavor. Not one tiny flavor. For one tiny favor. that they embarrass themselves on live television before the president of the United States and millions of their fellow Americans at next week's presidential debate. The prize will be awarded to the attendee who asks either of the candidates during the live telecast of the town hall format debate at Hofstra University if they prefer sausage or pepperoni on their pie. Now, that seems like a pretty innocent type of way to get free pizza for life. Is like, they're not saying, hey, say Pizza Hut's name. They're not saying, hey, this, that, or the other. They're literally just saying, we want you to waste your one question to the presidential debates or to the presidential candidates at this debate at Hofstra.
Right.
On what is their favorite topping, pepperoni or sausage on their pizza.
Sounds innocent.
Sounds very innocent.
What's the catch?
Let's talk and see if there is one. We recognize there are a lot of serious issues to be debated, but we also know a lot less serious but no less important ones are being discussed every night inside houses across America, Pizza Hut CMO Kurt Kane said in a press release. So for the candidates to be able to show that they're in tune with the issues, we felt pizza-related questions on behalf of the pizza party was very appropriate for a town hall debate.
The pizza party. That's awesome.
The promotion is part of a larger marketing campaign involving the launch of Pizza Hut's own political party, the Pizza Party, complete with the nomination of its own presidential candidate, Big Dinner Box.
So would that make Lipton the Tea Party?
I think so.
Awesome!
I think so. According to the press release, fans are encouraged to use the hashtag the Pizza Party on debate night in order to further push for this question to get asked of either of the candidates. God bless America. That's what they finished off their little press
Freedom
release.
Freedom of speech right there, huh?
Freedom of speech. Okay. Now, here's the question for you, Matt. You are, let's say, a adamant pizza lover. I mean, to the tune of 2-3 nights a week, you're ordering pizzas and getting them delivered to your house.
Right.
You just love pizza, okay? You're probably 900 pounds and your palate fat. You need to have a wall of your house removed just to get you out and off of your bed. But let's say you're not. Let's say you're a relatively thin or less than obese individual who happens to attend a town hall debate between two presidential candidates in 2012. Now, you are also politically motivated as a person, and so you are now standing in front of these two with a microphone, and you have the choice. Here's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to talk to one of the two men that's running to be president of the United States. It's going to be seen on live TV. You'll have a video of this that you're recording at home that you'll be able to play back for your kids 100 times. I talked to the president before, you know, things like that. So do you ask the serious question or do you give in to your pizza love? Do you give in to the pizza love?
I think you make it a two-parter.
You make it a two-part question. You start off with the one half and then you finish off with the pizza love.
Mm-hmm.
Just to like finish it off with some comedic feel.
Right.
I can see that. I know that that sounds a little odd, but I could possibly see potential pizza love coming out of the mouth of some individual.
I could do it.
You could do it? Could you do it with a straight face?
Well, yeah.
Do you think you'd be laughing when you ask the question?
Or no, because
knowing
that
what it's leading
well,
to?
Well, you know, we've both been on the air for a while now. And one of the keys of being on the air is being able to keep your composure.
Of course.
You know, you know this from doing improv, you know, is, you know, keeping your composure. You watch Saturday Night Live. Some people are really good at it. Some people are really bad at it. Will Ferrell is really well known for keeping his composure. However, Jimmy Fallon is horrible. He just laughs.
Yeah,
at
he laughs
everything.
Yeah, he breaks down every time.
So with the amount of training that I guess we have had and the experience, I think I would be able to pull it off.
All right.
Plus, as we all know, I'm a cold-hearted jerk in the first place, and I can just be manipulative when I want to and put on that actor face when I need something.
Well,
when I see something I want.
There's more that you can win in this world than just free pizza. If you go to theqnow.com's Facebook page, facebook.com/theqnow, you are more than welcome to like the page and be up for a chance to win a pair of passes to go to a local haunted house in St. Louis, Missouri, courtesy of ScareFest.com and the Darkness Haunted Theme Parks. Or you could go see TNA professional wrestler AJ Styles live at the Chaffetz Arena on October 27th here in St. Louis when TNA Impact Wrestling comes for a house show. That is also something that you can win. And you don't even have to get up in front of two presidential competitors and discuss anything with them whatsoever.
You know what goes really good with pizza, though?
Couldn't tell you.
Really?
Nope.
Man, American Patriot beer.
It does.
Goes great.
It does.
With pizza.
It does go very well with pizza. But hey, enough of the shameless plugs. Let us move on in our lives today. You've been to Olive Garden, of course.
I have.
In a weird way, similar to our first story about the gentleman with the resort company that he's planning on firing people if they hire Barack Obama to be president again.
So now the president is hired?
Technically he is kind of hired. I mean, he's voted on, but it's a hiring process. It's just a different style of hiring process.
I guess you're right.
I mean, in a weird way, it is a hiring process. Darden Restaurants Incorporated, the parent company of popular casual dining establishments such as Olive Garden, Red Lobster, and Longhorn Steakhouse, they are no longer offering full-time work schedules to employees at a select number of restaurants in four markets across the country. Though details were scant, the company did say there were no immediate plans to expand the test, which is aimed at helping them address the cost implications healthcare reform will have on their business. Now,
okay.
To be honest, let's read through this a little more and discuss, okay? Starting in January 2014, when most major provisions of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it is now so cleverly known as, and as Obama himself is now referring to it as, he says he has a special place in his heart for that name. That's what he said at the debates last week.
Okay.
When it goes into effect, companies with over 50 employees will be required to provide health insurance to employees working over 30 hours a week. Companies that flout the law will be fined $3,000 per uncovered employee. Okay. I think a lot of those employers, especially restaurants, are just going to ensure nobody gets scheduled more than 30 hours a week, Matthew Snook of the human resources consulting company Mercer told the Orlando Sentinel. Jumping the gun, Darden said it in its statement that employees at restaurants where the pilot programs were put in place will be limited to 28 hours a week specifically. Mm-hmm. A recent study by nonpartisan Urban Institute found that companies with over 1,000 employees will experience a 4.3% increase in overall spending due to the added healthcare costs. Currently, some 75% of Darden's 180,000 employees are already working exclusively part-time and not eligible for the benefits anyway.
Okay.
Darden, which ironically bills itself as the world's largest full-service restaurant company, made headlines last year when it started a tip-sharing program requiring the waitstaff to share its tips with all the other employees in the restaurant.
Man, so, I wonder if they still make the waitstaff claim all of that.
According to the Associated Press, that allows Darden to pay more workers a far lower tip credit wage of $2.13 rather than the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour because they're tipping and they're
short.
So, see, okay, there's two things to this. Free market economy, private company, they have the right to do whatever they would like to do. Nothing wrong with that. But it just seems like with this tip sharing that they did last year, now they know that they're walking into a potential increase in their spending. And Travis, who's been on the show before, has brought this up specifically. I think that they're all thinking it's going to be worse than it really is. Now, I'm not against being proactive to an extent, but I think this is not one of those situations where you need to be proactive. I think you need to be reactive so that you can be more solidified in your beliefs of why you don't like something.
Now, you may not need your bomb shelter, but why not run a drill every now and again to make sure you have what you need if you do?
Now, of course, there's always the caveat of worst case scenario possible. I understand that.
Now, they're not doing this company-wide. They're doing this in a few test markets. They're experimenting to see if this is a good idea. They're gonna work it. They're going to run the numbers, and they're going to see what happens.
Now, here's the kicker to all of this. And this is the thing that they don't mention here, and this is the thing that I guarantee you Darden is not taking into account. And this is where the proactiveness, I think, is a little bit egregious in this case. And I think that the proactiveness against the Obama policies for the Affordable Care Act are a little egregious across the board in general, especially from the conservative viewpoint. It says that it is going to require that companies offer health insurance to employees that work 30 hours or more. It does not state that every employee who works 30 hours or more is going to look for insurance once it's available. That is not the case. There might be a few people that do.
So what do you think the percentage is, though, of, like, now, this is complete speculation, and I'm just asking you an opinion because there's really, like, it hasn't happened yet, so there is no fact. There's no factcheck.org or anything like that. But let's say you have 100 employees.
Right.
And, you know, they are, okay, let's say you have 200 employees, and out of those 200 employees, 100 of them work 30 hours or more.
Okay.
And so when this Affordable Care Act goes into effect and you have to offer it to them, what do you think the amount of employees that are going to take you up on the offer is? Is it going to be on the low side, 20%? Or do you think it might be on the high side of near 75, 80% of these employees?
Well, here's the thing. For the majority of companies in the United States of America, Darden is kind of a special case. Darden is a company that has a heavy part-time staff load.
Yeah, there's a lot of young people, a lot of students.
Walmart has a heavy part-time staff load.
Mm-hmm.
But a majority of the companies in the United States of America, I would say 75 plus, don't have a large, if not at all, a part-time staff load. Most of them are salary jobs mm-hmm. in companies that where they already have 5,000 employees, and they offer every single one of their employees health insurance
right.
because they work 40 hours
now,
a week.
Now, most restaurants and most retailers do not have full-time, a majority of their employees
True.
Being full-time. A lot of it is part-time.
Right.
In a retail setting, you might have your store manager, your assistant manager, and maybe, like, a supervisory
right.
role.
Right, you might have four or five people at a store, like an Office Max, that are actually full-time employees.
And the rest of them, all part-time.
Right.
And, you know, that's fine. Now, in most restaurants, I've spent a lot of time in the restaurant industry. Most employees are not full-time.
That's right.
You hire extra employees, so you might have more employees, but it allows you to have a deeper set of people to tap into because a lot of people in that situation aren't the most reliable. They have lives. They have other things going on. They have school. They have family situations. And so you need to be able to replace those shifts very quickly, very easily. And if you have a lot more of employees to choose from instead of a small amount of dedicated full-time employees, it allows you more options.
Now, quick question for you. Let's put you into the shoes.
Okay.
You are a part-time employee who works for a pizza place.
All right.
Okay? Let's just throw it down like that because we were talking about pizza earlier and how you'd work there.
Sure.
Now, the Affordable Care Act goes into effect.
Okay.
You work 32 hours a week on average. Anyway.
Awesome.
Okay.
You're liking it.
Okay. That goes into effect and you have the ability because of the Affordable Care Act
mm-hmm.
to get health insurance.
Okay.
Now, my question for you is, do you take them up on it or not?
Well, I don't have health insurance right now.
Okay.
And if it is something that, you know, like with a lot of places that have health care, that, you know, the full-time benefits, some people will pay your benefits. Other people is, you know, you pay into it. So, like, if
right.
healthcare is, you know, $50 a month.
Well, in this case,
like
we're not going to get into the caveats of why they're paying or how they're paying or if you're paying it full or they're paying full.
No, because I think that's very important for me if I'm going to decide whether or not to get the health insurance. If I'm working 32 hours a week and I'm making $10 an hour,
right.
and then I am pulling in $320 a pay period.
Right.
So
I'm assuming it's going to be similar to how it is now with 40 hours a week you pay.
If they are offering me health care and if it's something that I'm going to have to pay money out of pocket for,
okay.
I would have to decide and work my budget to see if I can afford it. If it's something where they say, you know what, we have this health insurance and as part of the Affordable Care Act, it's taken care of. I would probably take them up on the offer.
Of course you would, because nobody's going to sit there and turn down free health care
right.
that is given to them by their employer if the opportunity is there. There's no reason for it. There's only a downside if you don't take it.
Right.
I mean, the upside is the upswing. It doesn't cost you anything extra out of your
pocket.
Now,
the downside is that it's coming out of their pocket.
But at the same point,
not necessarily my pocket.
That
unless
is,
they cut my hours.
Now, at the same point, that's kind of the chance and the risk that they take. Here's the funny thing. They have a problem with it because they feel that the government's coming down on them and forcing them to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're already in a position right now, currently, without it in place, where they're already mandatorily basically created a situation where 40 hours or more per week, you would offer health insurance anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already in this boat. It's just a change of how many hours a week that the person has to work, which opens up the door for more eligible employees.
Okay.
So my point is that I think it's just them getting butthurt again. Once again,
a lot of people getting butthurt.
It is the butthurt aspect of I'm a business owner. Okay, I love the fact that I can pocket more of my money. Not that we're against you pocketing more of your money.
If they keep more of their money, they're able to put more money into the local economy.
But they don't. You see, that is where, and you know what, maybe we'll start off the next hour talking about that a little bit, because I think that that's an important thing. And I kind of hit on it a little bit last week, but we can kind of expound upon it. They don't. They just don't. And I explained it last week. No, I'll explain it to you and then we'll discuss it.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah. And the other thing I was wanting to say is, for a lot of people that work for Olive Garden or Longhorn or any of those companies, if they are full-time employees and they're going to have to go down to part-time employees, guess what? Nobody's saying that you have to work there.
Yeah.
Is it a job? Yes. Are times tough sometimes? Yes. But there are employers out there that are hiring full times, and guess what? It's an opportunity. There are different experiences. There are different lessons. There are different skills that you can learn. And you should be able to see that, take it, develop it, and if you need to do something else for a living, just remember, you are not above whatever job that it is that you're doing. Turn it into something.
That's right. You make lemonade out of those lemons. That's what he's trying to say, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break here on the show. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about American Patriot Beer. Our buddy Matt here threw me under the bus on an American Patriot Beer move earlier.
I was trying to segue.
Yeah, you know, they are a great company. Full and light flavors of their beer. Delicious when they go into your mouth and your gullet. Check them out at AmericanPatriotBeer.com. Go grab yourself a six-pack. Try it out. We got Halloween coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like to sit at their houses, got the fire pits going. They're handing candy out to the kids, right?
Oh, yeah.
What better thing to do while little kids are walking up to your house than to slam a couple of beers right in front of them? You know what I'm saying? There's nothing better than that. American Patriot Beer. Check it out at AmericanPatriotBeer.com. We'll be back on the queue right after this.
With all these buyouts and all of our companies going overseas, there's no reason our beer needs to be owned by a foreign company.
American Patriot Beer is a crisp, clean lager, full of flavor and full of American spirit.
And it's being brought to you by some of the very same Americans who lost their jobs to buyouts. You're gonna love it.
It's all been made right here in the USA. The bottles, the grains, even the paper for the cartons.
One taste is all it takes. American Patriot and American Patriot Light, now available in bottles and cans.
Welcome back to The Queue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, and you are listening to us on KYRO, 1280 AM, WestplexNewsTalk.com, every single Saturday. Here you can find us. Also, you can visit the website, TheQueueNow.com, to find out old episodes, new episodes, information about me, information about Matt, information about everything. Plus, Matt Krueger is here with me. He's been here with me for the last hour. He's going to be with me here for another hour. How is your life going now that you know that, Matt?
Oh, man, I wish I had American Patriot Beer right now.
I bet you do. We are sponsored by American Patriot Beer, and also we got some love from TNA, Impact Wrestling, as well as the Darkness on a Theme Park, the Lent Brewery, and Creepy World. They are friends of the family also. And
I'm out of tasty beverage, man.
Oh, I think maybe American Patriot Beer right around the corner. Go grab one. Pop that top. Do what you got to do.
There's no drinking on the air, Mark.
All right, fair enough. Let's get back right into what we were talking about here on this wonderful show. We talked about at the end of last hour the fact that, you know, if these businessmen don't have to deal with these incurred costs because of Affordable Health Care Act, okay, that they would, you said that they would take that money and they would utilize it and reinvest it into communities.
I said that they can.
That they can. Okay.
They don't have to.
They don't have to, and they never do. Because currently there is no Affordable Health Care Act that they have to worry about. They do have the profits that they're worried about losing. No,
like, if a business owner here in St. Louis has employees,
yes,
and they are making a profit,
uh-huh,
the money that they spend, they live here in St. Louis, so they're going out to restaurants, they're buying cars,
right,
from the local dealerships.
Right, they'd be doing that anyway.
But now they have more money to do it, right?
Right, but my point is that
so if you make them
but they right now currently have that more money. You see, they're making their decisions.
And that's what they're doing.
But they're making their decisions in a proactive way based off of, oh, if this goes into effect, then I'm going to be losing this much money.
So here's the idea. If you make them pay these additional costs, they're going to have less money. They're not going to be as, considerate with the funds that they
have
in their
bank
account.
But they're already not considerate. That's my point. You see, that's what I talked about a little bit last week.
Because, and that's just anybody. That's not business owners. There's people in general are just holding onto their money tighter right now.
That's what, and that goes, okay, so then your argument is null. Because you also agree that your point is null.
They're holding onto their money tight right now, but if you make them pay more money out of pocket for something else, they're going to hold onto the rest of their money even tighter.
Right, I understand that, but when they're not holding on to it...
So that's going to affect the economy.
But when they're not holding on to the money that they think they're going to lose, tight, as you just said, they're still not utilizing the monies that they have left over. It's that theory that, oh, well, if you do this, then I'm going to lose that, but I could use that money for this over here. But here you are currently in the situation you are specifically talking about, and you're not using that money for that over there.
So it
makes you think that you're going to do it more then as opposed to now.
People that acquire money throughout their lives don't acquire money by just spending all of it.
Of course.
They are smart with their money, they hold on to their money, and that's how you build a savings. That's how you build your capita, your nest egg.
Well, the real truth, but that's not always true. The real truth to how you build
your net worth,
literally comes down to a very simple equation of supply versus demand when it comes to financials. Mm-hmm. A person who's got a lot of supply coming in, so gets paid well at their job. In most cases, their demand on that money source is not at the same level. If you're making $50,000 a year as a single person, okay, you're not spending $50,000 a year at all, even on your basic necessities, though.
Some people could. There is a lot of people
that... There
are a lot of people that spend way beyond their means. Most people spend beyond their means.
Yes, but no. That used to be true, I would say, 15 to 20 years ago.
Oh, I think it's more true.
No.
iPads, desktop computers, keeping up with the Joneses with a brand new hybrid.
Of course,
and people
are
spending way more money on their mortgage than they have the need to.
You think that that is a prevalent problem. But it is not.
It is a prevalent problem. What about the housing crisis?
I'll explain if you give me a chance.
All right, go for it.
You think that that is a prevalent problem, but it truly is not a prevalent problem. In most cases, a person gets one cell phone, they get one computer, and then they deal with it for many, many years on end. Some people are the ones that have to get the newest and latest and greatest, but that percentage of people is extremely small. 20 years ago, I think people spent beyond their means physically because they didn't know any better when it came to time to handle their credit cards the proper way. Things, I think, have just literally gotten more expensive by 2012. It is not a case of anymore the person who has to have a PS2, has to have a cell phone, has to have the computer, has to have their country club license, has to have the this, the that, the other. That's not the case anymore. People are now living paycheck to paycheck just to keep a roof over their head. Basic necessity. A roof. Just to keep food in the pantry. And I'm talking canned beans. I'm not talking about gourmet this and gourmet that. I'm talking about a can of beans, a loaf of bread, basic things. And they're living paycheck to paycheck just to keep that stuff on their table.
There's an idea in America that you, for whatever reason, feel that you have the right to live the exact same type of life that you had when you were a child. Let's say your parents live in a $300...
I don't think that's what we're talking about.
Just listen. Let me make my point. There is this idea, I believe, that if your parents lived in a $300,000 home,
of course,
that's what you're used to, and you're used to wearing certain type of clothes because that's the clothes you your parents bought you when you grew up, and you had certain types of foods because that's what your parents could afford because they went to college. That's the amount of money that they made, and those were the things that they could physically afford. When you leave the home, when you leave the nest,
and you
go out on your own, people think that for whatever reason they need to maintain that lifestyle.
I agree with you.
However, I don't think that they should. When you leave, guess what? You don't need to spend beyond your means. You don't need to get that amazing, nice car.
I think that's
you don't need to buy all of the expensive foods. You don't need to buy that big, giant home. No, what you need to do is you need to find a little apartment for about $400, and you need to live within your means. And if you meet a girl and she has a little $400 apartment, guess what? You guys like each other. You want to hang out. That's great. You don't need to be going out to Olive Garden. Here's what you do. You are eating macaroni and hot dogs at home. Why? Because if she loves you, she's going to love you anyway. And then if you guys are getting going, then you have kids, and then you buy something smaller, a starter home. And eventually you work your way up, and you work your way up. And then that way you stay out of debt.
Yeah, you know,
as
man,
best you can.
It's really funny. I agree with every single thing you just said. In fact, that is
great.
That is my actual basis for exactly one of the reasons why we had a problem in 2008 with the foreclosure and the mortgage bank meltdown. Mm-hmm. Was that there were a ton of kids who did graduate college growing up in middle class homes in similar areas like Lake St. Louis, Missouri, mm-hmm. where your average home is about $350,000 to $500,000. Mm-hmm. They grew up in that
nice
house.
Homes.
They get out of college. He's a mortgage banker. She's an elementary school teacher. They get themselves a $250,000 house in an area close to where they grew up in, because that's what they're comfortable with. But before you know it, things don't go well in the mortgage industry. He starts to lose his money. Money's not coming in. She's only a elementary school teacher. It's not like she's swinging a $60,000 a year job.
No.
At least not yet in her career. And unfortunately, they got in a little deeper than they thought. And before you know it, they're smart people that lose and get foreclosed on. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a very typical thing.
And you know whose fault it is? It's their own fault.
But here's the problem that I see with your, and I don't see it with what you said. I understand that. I agree with all that. I think that there's a caveat above that, beyond that, a tangent
always
around
is.
It. We have a situation now where things are just generally more expensive than people can physically afford. General things. You're talking about people who are taking advantage of their comfort level and buying things extravagant to where they need to start. I'm talking about people who do have good jobs, making $30,000 a year, and they literally are getting buried by gas prices, by food prices, and by general. Yes, you sat there and you said, what makes you think that you were given the right or guaranteed the privilege of this, that, or the other? How about the guaranteed privilege that I would at least be able to try to defend and fend for myself at some amicable level at all? Literally, unless your belief, Matt, is that, hey, if you need to live in a freaking trash can behind the Motel 8, then that's where you have to live and you need to deal with that. But you'll be the first person, Matt, along with a lot of others who've grown up in a middle class house, that will sit there as soon as they walk past the person living in the trash can behind the Motel 8 and go,
get a job.
Oh, you're just blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, I'm dealing with the things that weren't given to me or entitled to me,
okay,
because I don't have those rights.
There's no reason why the trailer parks are all over the place. They're in every state. They're in every county generally. There is no reason, and they're cheap.
You would be good for a trailer park.
I
would be a trailer park master.
I grew up in a trailer park.
It does not surprise me.
I think that the cost of a trailer is a lot like an apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And even cheaper.
It's even
and
cheaper,
you
yeah.
have you get your own place. You have grass that you can mow. There are kids in the neighborhood that your kids
really
can play with. And guess what? Your payment is probably, depending, now there are some really nice trailers. I heard a few years ago that Wayne Newton had bought a $2 million trailer.
Now think about this.
But you can get a trailer for $300 a month.
Dude, a trailer, literally.
A nice one.
To buy a double wide costs literally about $20,000 to $25,000.
Brofs has double wides for $19,995.
Yeah, we'll never forget that here.
Brofs has double wides for $19,995. Do I need to say it again? No, we've heard it thousands.
But I'm saying, for about $20,000 to $25,000, you can get a double wide home. A double wide home has three bedrooms.
Three bedrooms.
It has two
bathrooms.
It has a full kitchen. It has, and you literally could live in that. And it's like a house. It's literally the size of a small house.
Uh-huh.
And it's as nice as a small house. It is not just some piece of trash.
And if you're getting foreclosed on, guess what? Just hook it up to the truck and take it with you and run.
Sort of. not so easy with the double wide. Not so easy with the double wide. Hey, Matt, I have a few listener emails. Are we ready for some listener emails here on the queue?
Absolutely.
We have some listener emails I want to read to you guys out there. So let's get into some of these bad boys right here. Chronicleite writes to me and says, Mark, why do you think it's socially acceptable to watch hours upon hours of TV and Netflix? But when someone plays a video game for hours and hours, we're addicted and wasting time. That's an interesting question.
Okay, say that one more time.
Basically, no, I don't even have to say it one more time. I can just kind of paraphrase and get you to where you want to be. Basically, we have this double standard. The idea that if you're watching TV and Netflix and movies and Hours of the TARDIS and Doctor Who, that's socially acceptable and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
But there's a stigma on being a gamer.
But there's a stigma that if you're playing video games, an interactive thing for hours and hours and hours on time, that you're addicted to something or that you are wasting time, that you are blowing things off.
I want to know who said that it's socially acceptable to sit and watch hours upon hours of TV and Netflix.
I don't think that there's anyone who specifically said that it was socially acceptable, but I think he makes a great point and he asks a good question. I think the fact that we kind of take with a grain of salt hours upon hours of TV watching. We literally promote and push out into the atmosphere on a day-to-day basis via antenna waves and cable prime time.
Here's
3 hours of your life that you can just sit here and watch Scrubs,
Let me pose it to you this way. The Walking Dead.
Yes.
You get 13 episodes per season, okay?
Except for season one.
Well, except for season one. Second season, you get 13 episodes. They're an hour apiece. So let's just say that's 12, 13 hours worth of footage. And let's say you have a day off. Okay.
Yes, you have a day.
Or even you work that day and you just want to take the other half.
Set me up a story, Matt.
Half of the day.
It's a Thursday night.
I don't need to get that in there.
And I have a day off.
Don't make me point at you with my thumb.
Thank you, Bill Clinton.
Okay.
I told my daughter that, by the way, today.
Did you really?
To point with the thumb. Yeah,
nice.
I thought that was
so kind of what's the difference between sitting down for 13 hours and watching The Walking Dead Season 2 from beginning to end in a 13-hour straight.
Or playing Call of Duty.
Or just sitting and playing World of Warcraft or Call of Duty for 13 hours straight. What's the difference?
I don't think that there is technically.
I agree with you. I don't think that there is either.
And
I think they're both time wasteful. I think you need to be going outside because guess what? You're probably, if you're just sitting there doing nothing, guess what? You're eating Doritos. You're drinking Mountain Dew. You're not really socializing. Sure, you're experiencing things, but guess what?
Now,
it's an escape.
Here's funny.
It's an escape from reality.
There is a connotation that comes with gaming of the antisocial aspect.
The Asperger's, like, I don't know how to talk to people, but I can yell at them and call them names through my headset on PSN.
Now, I don't think that's Asperger's, but okay. But I think what's really interesting about that antisocial thing is that if we're talking about it in the context that we have just set up, you watch 13 hours of The Walking Dead. Yeah, you were by yourself in a room, but I don't think that people, like, if you go to, say, we brought it up again, the pizza place job, you know what I'm saying? You go to your pizza place job, you start doing whatever you're doing there, and before you know it, you turn around and you say to someone, oh man, you know, somebody brings up The Walking Dead, you go, oh man, I just got done watching all of season two, all 13 episodes of that thing, back to back to back, I loved it, it was a great show. The person is not going to look at you and go, oh, so you sat in a room for 13 hours, maybe even split up between a 6 and a 7 hour
period?
I
wonder if it's just because a TV show or a movies or whatever just is able to reach a broader audience, and gaming is more of a niche thing that the same amount of people aren't really into. When you look at the TV and movie industry, they are huge. I'm not saying that the gaming industry isn't huge, but when you compare it to the TV and movie industry, it's still a little kid, man.
Yeah,
It's not as big.
You make a great point there.
I think maybe that's why. There just aren't as many people into games as there are into TV and movies.
Now, this one is brought to me by Eamon Crow. Eamon Crow writes, Mark, love the show, big fan, and I love when you talk about some of the letters from the listeners. That is why I'm writing in. What is the craziest thing you've ever witnessed while you were in college?
Oh, geez. I don't even know if I'm allowed to tell my story.
If you can tell your story in the next 6 or 7
no,
minutes.
No, I'm just saying I'm not sure if it's family-friendly or radio-friendly.
Oh, it's that bad, huh?
I was...
Was there a murder involved in this?
More of a cover up. No, no, nothing like that. I had a lot of them, man. Like I've had, when I was in college, like I was held up at gunpoint. I was held up at knife point. Like I got into a bar, knife fight almost. And I had like a big guy, you know, pull me off to the, like a friend of mine, 6'7", big old redhead rugby player.
Right.
Like pull me off, you know, and like just crazy things, nutty stuff at parties, people jumping off of 3-story buildings in the pools.
If I remember correctly, you told me a story. I think it was when you were in college. You fell through a window.
Yeah, I fell through a 2nd-story window, you know, in an
inebriated state.
In an inebriated state.
But you fell 2 stories to the ground and survived.
Got up, walked back inside, and went right back to sleep. Yeah, just really crazy thing. I had an insane time and I'm not saying it was all good, I'm not saying that it was all bad, but I had an insane time while I was in college.
I don't know, now in this case, you're talking about personal. The question was that you've witnessed in college, but that is you witnessing also those things,
right.
You know, those situations. I don't know if there's no real crazy things that ever happened to me while I was in college. And I can't really pinpoint off the top of my head some story from college that I witnessed. I mean, I guess the most outlandish crazy thing I saw that physically popped off and happened was I used to be a DJ for a fraternity house, the Pi Kappa Alpha, the Pikes,
okay.
Which is a fraternity, a national fraternity organization for colleges, when I went to the University of Missouri, St. Louis. I remember that they used to get into some pretty heated arguments quite often that never really went anywhere with the Sig Taus, which was another fraternity house.
Okay.
All I remember, though, is that there was a crazy night where I was DJing, and I didn't witness it personally. I saw the carnage afterwards. Evidently, some stuff went on between a girl who was dating one of the Sig Taus and went on with one of the Pike guys. So the dude came down to talk to the Pike guy, and he got jumped. So they turned around, and he went back to his fraternity house, grabbed all his brothers from his fraternity house, the Sig Taus house, brought all of them down to the Pike house party where the guy got jumped originally, and it turned into literally a 40-40 melee.
Wow.
In a sand volleyball court behind the house, inside the actual upstairs area. I was DJing in the basement that they had kind of converted into like a makeshift kind of nightclub.
Right.
That's pretty much where they just try to get all the girls' pants wet.
Yeah.
And then take them upstairs, get them drunk and have fun with them. And
nice.
Everybody have a good time. That was their thing, you know, not to get into too many details. But all I can remember is the fact that I walked upstairs. The police came in and told me to shut the music off. I go walking upstairs. All I remember is coming out onto the back deck of the house, looking at the lit up sand volleyball court that they had built for the brothers in the house, and seeing like 2 ambulances with their lights going on over here. There was like literally like 40 or 50 people on the sand volleyball courts. Some people tending to this individual. This dude literally was just gushing blood down from his forehead all across his body. And he was one of the Sig Taus guys. You know, there were people screaming at each other. So it was a melee situation. It was just out of control. By the way, speaking of melee situation, did you see the video and the story about the 2 wedding parties in Philly? They got into the fist fight.
I saw something briefly pop up on my news feed, but it, you know, it's like just one of those things where I just didn't care. Like it's like one of those things that didn't affect me and didn't really grab my attention, so I passed right over it.
Well, I think what's really interesting about this is this is almost in a weird way the kind of the same argument that the liberals and the conservatives have of the have and the have nots.
Okay.
Okay. What happened was there was 2 parties going on at this hotel for 2 weddings. One had an open bar, one had a cash bar. The cash bar people decided, since they were already dressed in wedding attire, that they were going to go crash the open bar party and get free beer. Well, when they go...
Makes sense to me.
It makes sense, especially when you're inebriated and you're like, I've already spent $30 on this cash bar and I'm drunk. I want to get a few more, but I ain't got no money in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So they go across the hall to the other party. They're there for a little bit, evidently.
So who are you here for?
Exactly.
I am the uncle of the brother's cousin.
Or somebody says, probably drunk off their butt, of that they're with so-and-so's family.
Oh, man, we're not even part of this, man. We're like, well, across the hallway at the other thing, but you guys got the open bar, man.
Right.
And then one big person was probably like, wait a second, you're stealing our booze?
Yeah.
No, you don't steal a drunk person's booze.
Right, you don't do that, especially when it costs thousands of dollars to have a wedding.
And to have an open bar like that?
Yeah.
Because you got to pay down payment on it.
Yeah, exactly. So basically it turned into a melee situation. Yeah, they all went toe-to-toe. And I'm talking like 30, 40 people going toe-to-toe in the lobby of a Sheraton hotel. The video was taped by a 15-year-old who happened to be spending the night there celebrating his birthday. The 57-year-old uncle of one of the brides, he has a heart attack and dies.
Oh, my God.
On his birthday, that happens to also be his niece's wedding day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's crazy. So the last thing you literally see before you die was you started on your birthday at your niece's wedding, having a good time, getting drunk and enjoying your family. And then the last thing you see is a melee fight and then you die.
He shouldn't have had all those cheeseburgers, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to take a quick break here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get a little news update here from CBS News here on KYRO. Stick with us. Check out theQ9.com while we take this break. Also, don't forget, check out Savage Vibrations. Matt's little show over there that he does with me every once in a while.
It's just a little thing I do.
It's a little thing. awr.podomatic.com or go to facebook.com/Savage Vibrations and check out the feed. We'll be back on the Q after this. Welcome back to the Q. Of course, Mark Bland, Matt Krueger, and we are talking this little last section here of the show. We're going to keep it Halloween themed here, Matt. We've had an exciting show. We've talked about giveaways. We've talked about pizza. We've talked about a lot of interesting things. We even almost got into a fist fight live on the air. All these things happened, and you're still out of your drink. Yep, still out of the drink. Nothing you can do about it.
I'm sad.
I know. Hi, so keeping up with the Halloween aspect of the month of October, as we will every single year that we do the queue. Okay. We're going to always do Halloween stuff in Halloween time, because I'm a big fan of Halloween stuff, and actually I'm planning on trying to get on some of the guys from the Paranormal Task Force to come on the show and talk about some paranormal stuff, just like we did last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, weren't they on the show last year? I believe I was there for that show, actually.
You were there for that show, and we had a good time talking to the Paranormal Task Force. Also, I'm going to try to get, like I said earlier, Larry Kirshner, the head guy for Creepy World and the Darkness Haunted Theme Park, and his Halloween Productions company, to come on the show and talk a little bit about that. But right now, I want to hit you with something a little different. Matt, have you ever incurred any spooky stuff? Now, we've talked on Savage Vibrations
right
many times during Halloween about movies and lists and this, that, and the other. But not on the queue too much. Have you ever incurred any some serious spooky stuff in your life?
Well, there is one story that generally pops into my head when people ask me, hey, have you ever seen a ghost? You know, it's like, has anything, you know, kind of spooky or eerie ever happened to you? And there's one story that is generally my go-to story.
You know, is that the one that we talked about on Savage, or at that time period, maybe Ramblings with Mark?
It might have been Ramblings at the time.
Where we talked about you with your mom? The discussion about the ghosts.
Yeah, when I was a kid in the Cat in the Hat book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's that one.
It's not a bad story.
It's actually a pretty cool story.
It is a pretty cool story. Maybe if you guys get a chance, go search through some of the old archives of Savage Vibrations. Yeah.
We're going to force you to listen to all of it. We're not going to tell you which episode it is.
It's obviously one of the ones that came out in October of the last few years. Anyway, Matt, I have a list here of the 10 most terrifying places on Earth. On Earth. The entire world. The entire planet that we live on.
Is the Mitt Romney tour bus on there?
No, it's not.
Oh. What about the Obama tool bus? The tour bus.
Well, maybe Mitt Romney calls it the tool bus. It's very possible. I'm not sure. But no, I have the 10 most terrifying places on Earth. And I want to kind of go through these and kind of tell you a little bit about them and what the scare factor is.
Okay.
What's going on?
I wonder how many of these I will have heard of.
All right. Let's start off with number 10, The Riddle House. The Riddle House in Palm Beach County, Florida, was originally a funeral parlor. The Victorian house was dismantled and rebuilt in yesteryear village at the South Florida Fairgrounds, and in 1920s, house became privately owned by Carl Riddle. Now, the terror here is that Joseph, one of the Riddle's former employees, committed suicide by hanging himself in the attic of the house. Joseph, for whatever reason, hated men and displays this hatred by attacking men who enter the attic. One man had a lid flung at his head, and men are now no longer allowed in the attic in general. Other places in the house are haunted as well, with furniture being frequently moved. Funeral parlor. Could you imagine living in a funeral parlor? You see that in horror movies.
I'm pretty demented, so yeah. Like,
have you ever known someone who lived in a funeral parlor? I do know somebody. My neighbor who lives directly across the street. My neighbor who lives across the street, Leo, mm-hmm. literally lived in a funeral parlor for a few years of his life when he was in his teens.
Well, I've applied to work at funeral parlors before in the past. It's actually a really hard industry to get into, and I was just wanting
to make good money.
And I was just looking for like an introductory position as like a greeter, somebody to, you know, talk to, you know, people, like a caretaker of some kind.
Would that bother you though? Like, see, I have this thing called thanatophobia, which is the fear of death and dying. Now, I think everybody has
a reasonable fear
of death, but I literally will wake up sometimes at night, depending. It hasn't happened in quite a while, but there was about a 5-year period there where there were nights I woke up in just nightmare-esque cold sweats, just fearing how much longer I have left on this earth, what it's going to be like when it happens, all like just over-the-top crazy stuff. Now, like I said, it hasn't happened in literally a few years now, but at the same point, it is a very freaky aspect for me, and being around dead bodies doesn't necessarily bother me, but I don't know if I could work in like a morgue or like funeral parlor.
I think I could. I think I would totally be able to handle that. Like, I've told you about applying at funeral parlors. At funeral places. I've always wanted to drive a hearse. Doesn't always have to be the awesome Ghostbusters version, but, you know, preferably that would be cool. I don't think I'd have a problem with that, you know, being that I've sought that out as a profession in the past.
All right. Number 9 on the list is Helltown. Appropriately named, of course. If you're going to be a scary place, you might as well call yourself Helltown.
Welcome to Hell.
Or Deathtown. Or
Murderville.
Well, Murderville. The northern part of Summit County in Ohio is known by the eerily blunt moniker Helltown. In the 1970s, Boston Township was the site of a government buyout and subsequent mass eviction of citizens. The houses were intended to be torn down and the land used for a national park, but the plans never quite manifested, as well as a lot of government things.
Sounds like it's now a ghost town. And what it sounds like you're saying is that the government needs to keep their hands out of everything, right?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Oh, it sounded like it for a second.
Legends spawned wildly, and who could blame the legend mongers? Driving through the dark, wooded landscape was enough to give you chills even when it was populated, let alone when you have to drive up by boarded houses standing next to the burnout hulks of others. The local fire department used some of the buildings for practice.
Makes sense.
So it's basically like a modern ghost town. Mm-hmm. Whereas most ghost towns are like from the 1930s, 40s, 20s, or back into the Wild West towns. This is a more modern, you know.
You know, there are apocalyptic styled cities in Russia where they are entire uninhabited, unpopulated cities
because of Chernobyl
with you know, skyscrapers and big tall buildings
in Russia.
Yeah, and they are just unpopulated, that nobody lives there,
really,
and like they're,
not one
they're,
person
they're starting to ruin. It's like moss growing up sides of the buildings. Have you ever watched that that special Earth Without People or whatever it was on Discovery Channel or the Learning Channel?
No,
a few years ago. They basically did it. They were like, what would happen to the Earth after people are all gone? And they kind of did like a CGI image of like cities decaying. And that's what these cities look like.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you find out about the Russian cities?
The internet.
Just doing some natural searching.
Yeah, just, you know, poking around in the internet, looking for interesting things and, you know, going to forum boards and people are talking about whatnot and this and that and different topics. And it was just one of those things that I snagged onto.
Well, whether it's based on a kernel of truth or cooked up in the heads of creative visitors, the persistent legends of Helltown add to the creep factor. It's not just the fact that it's a modern-day ghost town. The steep Stanford Road drop-off, immediately followed by the dead end, is aptly named the end of the world. If you get stuck on this dead end for too long, according to ghost story enthusiasts, you may meet your end at the hands of one of the many members of the endless parade of freaks patrolling the woods. Satanists, Ku Klux Klan members, an escaped mental patient, an abnormally large snake, mutants caused by an alleged chemical spill proudly march in this parade of horror. And if you stray from the roads, you may find Boston Cemetery, home to a ghostly man, grave robbers, and the quirkiest of all, a moving tree. So it seems like there's a lot of little legends around Helltown in general to kind of freak you out.
I don't want
to
go
like,
there.
You kind of don't have, you don't have a specific thing to grab onto.
It's a collaboration.
It's a collaboration of things. Like, if you want to scare your girlfriend and you live near
this town,
take her
to the end of the world.
You take her to the end of the world. Or the moving tree by the cemetery. I mean, that guy could get you. If it's not that guy, maybe a Satanist is going to, like, skin a cat right in front of you. Now, here's the funny thing. Here in St. Louis, right outside of St. Charles, we had this thing called Equidome that was down by Francis Howe High School.
Okay.
It was an old water treatment plant that was boarded up and it wasn't being used.
Are you talking about the one in Old Town St. Charles?
No. What's that?
Are you talking about the... Because there was a water treatment plant in Old Town St. Charles. You go down to Old Town and like 5th Street and there's recently...
No, that's way at the end.
But yeah, recently, I mean, that was where like the homeless people and there were like these big, huge, giant pits.
They've redone that up.
And now it's apartments.
It's not only apartments. My actual brother-in-law had his wedding reception at the one building in the old water treatment plant. Like, they've really built
like that was, like, if you needed anything, like drugs, if you
that
needed...
That was the spot, huh?
Yeah, like, that was Skid Row.
But no, this one was out in the woods. It was a water treatment plant for the older parts of St. Charles County that were uninhabited at times, you know, that they were still building up. And it actually became a headquarters for the Midwest of Satanists. They were using this old building, and it became a legend that if you go there on Halloween or around Halloween, you could find yourself getting shot at. You could find yourself getting chased down. It was, the freaks would come out at night. They literally would come out.
The freaks come out at night.
So yeah.
Freaks come out at night.
But here's a whole town. Here's a whole town of little buildings and houses where, like, this house could be Satanists. Two houses down past these two burned out ones could be Ku Klux Klan members. All doing their things at the same time. You don't know which ones are going to chase you down. So you have that one. Number 8 is Stull Cemetery. Stull, Kansas, a tiny unincorporated town in, BFE nowhere. Pardon the Douglas County area. 10 miles west of Lawrence and 13 miles east of Topeka puts it far from anything resembling a large population. The population of Stull is approximately 20 people, but don't let the deceptively quaint village fool you. A darker side lurks behind the bushes and in the shadows. In the early 20th century, two tragedies rocked the tiny settlement. First, a father finished burning a farm field only to find charred corpse of his young son in the aftermath.
Man.
That had to suck. The second incident occurred when a man went missing and was later found hanged from a tree. As far as legend goes, the infamous cemetery is where you can find your feel of the supernatural lore. The book Weird U.S. has this to say about Stull Cemetery. There are graveyards across America that go beyond merely being haunted and enter into a realm of diabolical. There are places so terrifying that they say the devil himself holds court and worships in those places. The cemetery in Emmanuel Hill in Stull, Kansas is one of these places. Rumors exist stating that the Stull Cemetery is one of the seven gateways to hell. While the old church is now demolished, many attempt to sneak in at night for a peek at the unsavory goings-on. But be warned, the police patrol heavily, especially on Halloween and the spring equinox. The place is supposed to be so unholy, in fact, that some claim Pope John Paul II refused to allow his plane to fly over the eastern Kansas section on his way to his appearance in Colorado. The validity of this last claim is up for debate, but none can deny that legends or not, Stull Cemetery is a definitely terrifying place to be.
No kidding.
So that is kind of crazy right there. Number 7 is the Ridges. Known as the Athen Lunatic Asylum, the Ridges was renamed after the state of Ohio acquired the property. Another Ohio spot.
Man.
Ohio's got some issues aside from potentially deciding whether we have Barack Obama or Mitt Romney again.
Right.
Ohio has just a lot of haunted places. Let's just put it that way. The hospital saw hundreds of lobotomies and often declared masturbation and epilepsy to be the causes of insanity in patients. That would suck.
If you were
just one of those people who went into, like, this place because they said that you masturbated too much,
mm-hmm.
What natural guy is going to look at you and go, yep, you've got issues, you masturbate too much? Is there an age caveat on that, by the way? Like, if you're 13 and under, they're like, okay, it's cool, you're just finding out about yourself. But once you hit, like, 26, they're like, okay, dude, no. Too much masturbating going on. Athens, Ohio is actually listed as the 13th most haunted place in the world as per British Society for Psychical Research. The nearby Ohio University is said to be heavily haunted. The notorious rapist with a dissociative identity disorder, Billy Milligan, was housed at the facility for years. Number six, Humberstone and Lenoria. The two.
I have never heard of any of these.
No, I have not yet either. Now, the Stahl one I might have heard about. There was an actual show called A Haunting that was done by the Sci-Fi Channel a few years ago.
Okay.
And I think it talks about a house that is in realm of Stahl, in the area of Stahl. And I think the Stahl plays a very heavy part in it. I might have heard about that. Two abandoned mining towns in Chile were recently featured on an episode of the Sci-Fi Channel show Destination Truth. In 1872, the town was founded as a saltpeter mine and business boomed. However, after several heavy blows, the businesses declined and the collapse in 1958. And the town of Humberstone and its surrounding towns were abandoned in 1960. The treatment of workers in both towns bordered on slavery, and now the towns are left standing derelict. It's rumored that the dead of the Lenoria Cemetery rise at night and walk around the town just in normal. All of the dead. Just randomly. like it's an episode of a Harry Potter movie. You know, just all the dead come up together at the same time and just kind of run around.
We're just hanging out.
Ghostly images frequently show up in photographs in Humberstone. These towns are so terrifying, the residents nearby Akiki refused to enter them. The former residents never left and can be seen walking around, and children have been playing. The cemetery of Lenoria, regardless of whether its occupants actually walk at night, contains open graves where the bodies are fully exposed, leaving you to wonder why. So, here's a cemetery where they just didn't cover them up.
That's kind of creepy.
That is a little creepy. I don't know if I would handle that one well. Gonna be honest, just walking around a graveyard and then all of a sudden you go up to this graveyard and you're like, oh, it's open. But the box is closed, but it's 6 feet down. And it's like, okay, that box is closed, is it locked? It's 6 feet down, but it's not covered. So here it is, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm staring at it and I'm going,
I hope I don't fall in.
Do you question if you fall in, would something happen to you? Do you question standing there, will something pop out?
Depends on how much you believe in the
supernatural. Would you be willing to jump down in there and open the box? Or does that come through a desecration for you?
Maybe at like noontime, not at 1 in the morning when it's dark.
You wouldn't be willing to do it at 1 in the morning?
It depends.
You're a manly man.
How much money am I getting for it?
Oh, I don't know.
If you're good at something, never do it for free, right?
Number five on this list, the Philadelphia State Hospital at Byberry, or known simply as Byberry, was the poster image for patient maltreatment. The hospital, in its most popular form, was founded in 1907 and known as Byberry Mental Hospital. It exceeded its patient limit quickly, maxing out at over 7,000 by 1960.
That's a lot of crazy people.
The terrifying aspect of this location isn't so much its hauntings or the unsavory characters that lurked after dark. The terror here comes from the facts that how the hospital was run. Human excrement lined the hallways, which were many patients slept. The staff was abusive and frequently exploited and harassed the patients. One patient had a tooth pulled out with Novocaine, while another killed and dismembered a female patient. Although the killer, Charles Gable, was never found, the victim's body was found strewn across the property. So you got the Charles, Charles Gable ready to welcome you to Byberry anytime you'd like to get over there. Number four, Leap Castle. It's over in Ireland. Irish Castle is perhaps the most popular location featured on the list. It's worth recapping the long, often gruesome history. The castle is rumored to be haunted by a vast number of spirits, including a violent hunched beast known as the Elemental.
That really? Almost sounds like something Harry Potter would have to fight against. Oh, the Elementals are coming.
Just because it sounds like Dementor?
Yeah. It is most recognizable by the accompanying smell of rotting flesh and sulfur.
Always, yeah.
While renovating the castle, workers discovered an oblet, which is a dungeon accessible only through a ceiling hatch into which prisoners were thrown and forgotten or left to die. How would you like
Man,
to be like
brutal?
How would you like to be the guy who's like, we found this and we're going to go enter it for the first time after hundreds of years? That would be freaky. Because you just don't know, man. Here's a good one for you. Number three, Shades of Death Road. The New Jersey Road winds through 7 miles, 7 miles of countryside. And along that stretch...
That's a long piece of scary place.
And along the stretch, it gives no definitive clues as the origin of its eerie name. While the exploitation for this highly unusual name has been lost, many theories abound. Some say the murderous highwaymen would rob and kill those along the road back in the old days. Others say the reason was because violent retaliations by locals against very same highway, resulting in their lynched corpses being hung up along the road as a warning. Some attributed it to 3 murders that occurred in the 1920s and 30s. The first murder saw a robber beating his victim over the head with a tire iron. Second saw a woman decapitate her husband and bury the head and body on separate sides of the road. And the third consisted of poor Bill Cummings being shot and buried in a mud pile. So,
jeez.
One day during the 1990s, some visitor found hundreds of Polaroid photographs scattered in the woods just off the road. They took some of them and shared them with Weird New Jersey, which published a few samples. Most of the disturbing images showed a television changing channels. Others showed a woman or women blurred and somewhat difficult to identify, lying on some sort of metal object, conscious but not smiling. Local police began an investigation after the magazine ran an item with the photos, but... It has remainders disappeared shortly afterwards. Number two is the Tuol Sheng Genocide Museum. Welcome to Phnom Nam, Cambodia, home of the genocide. Dom Nam? Phnom Nam. The Genocide Museum. This former high school was converted in 1975 to a security prison, 21 by the Khmer Rouge. The prison was used to base and torture murdered prisoners. The ghosts of an estimated 17,000 victims of Tuol Sleng continue to roam the halls, and odd happenings around the place have often attributed to them. 17,000 victims. That's a lot of ghosts. That's a lot of options for ghosts. That's just not
that
a few people.
That seems overwhelming.
Yeah, that would probably be a really, really, really scary place to go. And number one... The final, most terrifying place on Earth, the mines of Paris. The seemingly infinite tunnels that run below the streets of Paris should not be confused with the catacombs of Paris, the famous underground ossuary, although the mines are also mistakenly referred to as the catacombs. Exploring the mines is illegal, and penalties include heavy fines. The mines were used to dig out minerals from Paris's varied sediments, and the tunnels are what got left behind. The terror of the mines are now unkept, unpatrolled, and unsafe. And as far as legend goes, ancient cults and creatures patrol the depths. Spirits dwell in infinite shadows, and if one wanders deep enough and survives, they may even enter Hades itself. It is also one of the 7 gateways of hell. So, those are the 10 most terrifying places on Earth. Matt, can you handle any of them? I kind of want to go to the stall thing. And I want to go to Ohio to Helltown.
Yeah, I kind of want to go to Helltown. I kind of want to go to that castle to see if there's anything to this whole elemental thing. I was doing a little bit of research that the elemental is basically in control of the elements and can basically change form.
I think that the Helltown one out of all of them, I mean, they're all freaky places, okay? But I think the Helltown one... provides the biggest bang for your buck scare because of the fact that in most of the other cases, it's ancient or old stuff that is like residual ghastly ghost type paranormal stuff mm-hmm. that's going on that scares you. With the Helltown situation,
it could be real people.
You kind of got the Satanists, the Ku Klux Klan. You've got like real people that could chase you through woods where you don't know where you're going mm-hmm. through an entire town.
A really kind of a Hills Have Eyes moment.
Right. It's a whole town. It's like you could be running away from these people and try to hide behind these houses, but you don't know behind those houses what's going on. Like, you could run into other dangers while you're...
The idea of, like, what was it, 17,000?
In that one place? Oh, in the Genocide Museum? Yeah.
That sounds terrifying.
Gotta love the Khmer Rouge, baby. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to get out of here on The Q. I want to welcome every single one of you to go like our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheQNow. You like it, you could win tickets to TNA, to the Darkness Haunted Theme Park, as well as other giveaways that are coming up real soon. Make sure you do that. Also, check out TheQNow.com, our website. Contact us there if you want to ask us any questions or be a letter to the listener like we put on the show here. Matt loves that. Also, I want to thank Matt Kruger for coming on the show today. Thank you so much, Matt.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Each and every time.
Make sure you check out Savage Vibrations, facebook.com/Savage Vibrations. That's going to do it for us. My name is Mark Bland.
I'm Matthew Kruger.
And we will see you guys next time on The Q. Peace. Take care. You've been listening to KYRO 1280 AM, the blowtorch of the Midwest. And you-